You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast, where we chat with equine veterinarians about the cases they've worked on in their clinics. I'm your host, Alex Beckstedt, Editorial Director of Equimanagement, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Beau Rainbow about a filly with severe rhinos that required surgical correction. This episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast is brought to you by DECRA. Dr. Beau Rainbow of Kentucky Equine Veterinary Dental Specialists is from Ocala, Florida, where he grew up on a commercial thoroughbred farm. Following graduation from Davidson College, he was accepted into the prestigious Darley Flying Start program to study the thoroughbred industry around the world for 2 years. During this time, he knew that veterinary medicine would be his calling. He was accepted into the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. After graduation in 2012, he worked for the Haggard Equine Medicine Institute and then did stints in Western Australia and Texas before returning to the bluegrass. He and his wife, Dr. Jackie Snyder, have 2 sons and a farm in Versailles. Thank you, Dr. Rainbow, for joining us today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So your area of practice is equine dental care, but the case that you're sharing with us today is a bit of a combined effort with a whole team of veterinary surgeons. Can you give us some background about this filly and her condition and how you became involved in this case?
Sure. So originally, this case came through Dr. Jack Easley when I was his resident. And Dr. Easley, Jack Easley, is sort of the godfather and grandfather of modern equine dentistry. And with the American Veterinary Dental College, you become board certified in dentistry, but also sort of it's oral and maxillofacial surgery. So we see a lot of the cases where they've got monkey mouths, parrot mouths, or rhinos. So the 4 different classifications of malocclusions, 1 through 4, and a rhino is a class 4. And this filly that we've got today, Veda, was introduced to us by a veterinarian in Ohio who was working with the Fighting Chance Rescue. And she said, this filly, you know, they were given this filly. She was a couple days old because the owner was going to euthanize her. She was part of a commercial quarter horse operation. And the owner said, well, this isn't a valuable broodmare for me. This isn't a valuable prospect for me to try to raise and rein and sell. And so it was given to Fighting Chance, and Fighting Chance contacted us asking what can be done, because we're sort of, Dr. Easley's famous for doing things, whether these rhinos are putting braces on horses, but a class 4 rotates into 2 different orientations. Not only does the maxilla twists one way and then drops down. So when we get the call and this horse is only 4 or 5 days old, there's nothing we do about it at that point. The main thing is, can these horses nurse? If they're still on the mare, can they nurse normally? The vast majority of the time, they can nurse. And if they can nurse, we let them grow up like a normal foal. They just have a really bent mouth. It's a bent maxilla, and they can do well with that. And a lot of these foals, people will notice these young horses during their new foal exams. The veterinarians will say, well, I noticed it was a little bit off. But what happens is with them is that they'll be a little bit shifted. Maybe they'll notice the central incisors don't line up. But as that foal starts growing dramatically in those first 6 to 8 months of life, the twist becomes substantially more developed. And so we have to give these foals heads enough time to develop before we get surgery. So in this case, we told these folks we needed to wait about, 8 or 9 months. Let's see how this foal develops. Let's make sure it doesn't have other congenital abnormalities. As long as it appears to sort of grow up and have a normal, healthy life, that would be good. So let's make sure it has a good start. And that's what these owners did. Fighting Chance raised this foal up. They kept it on a bottle. And when it was about 9 months old, they brought it down to Lexington, Kentucky, where we do all of our general anesthesia at Haggard Equine Medical Institute. And that was our first chance to see this foal. And actually, I misspoke there. Before we brought it to Haggard's, it had a CT performed at Rood and Riddle in October because we wanted to see what exactly this looked at. At this point, I was kind of curious and using CT to plan some of these surgical procedures, and how would it help us? Could we more specifically craft an implant or more specifically craft our surgery so that we have an even better outcome than what we've been doing with previous cases. So we had a CT of it done, which this is kind of neat. Hopefully people will get to see some of the CT images, because when you strip all the soft tissue away on these things and you see the CTs, they're pretty wild. And this particular filly, at the age at which we had it done, her maxilla, her whole or premaxilla, essentially everything from the incisive bone back to her first premolar was deviated hard and to the left and tucked down. So her, essentially what would be her 503 was actually behind her 703. It had displaced so much. And the other thing we have to watch out for these little horses is that they'll typically do great as foals. They'll breathe normally. But as they develop, we're always concerned that the reason part of this develops is that it has a growth plate on the side of the face, and those growth plates aren't expanding as usual. So with the growth plate locked, that curve is going to become substantially more dramatic as that head expands, but it's locked on one side. So part of the next sort of consequence you have of that is that a nares on either side, one of the nostrils is going to get occluded. And so what they begin to notice up in Ohio, they said, hey, this filly is now beginning to have more difficulty breathing. So at that point, that's telling us it's definitely time to consider surgical intervention. If this, you know, young horse is growing up and wants to run around and be a normal young horse, and yet it starts blowing and struggling to breathe, we need to figure out a way to help it. And we could do things like an alar fold resection. We could put a tracheotomy in it and give it a way to breathe that way. But in the end, I think ultimately, if we can want to try to help this horse out the most by correcting its malocclusion as best as possible, that's going to help line up our septum and be much more conducive to life with these little guys.
Calling all equine veterinarians. Are you tired of feeling like you're on an island when it comes to caring for your patients? Decra Veterinary Products is here to bridge that gap. They understand the challenges you face. That's why they offer a comprehensive line of high-quality products like Zycosan and Osphos, and empower you to offer your patients cutting-edge therapies like ProVet APC. They're not just a supplier, though. Decra provides ongoing training and support to help you stay ahead of the curve and deliver the best possible care. Visit www.decra-us.com to discover how Decra can be your partner in equine health.
So they got a CT done, and we actually, this one was pretty neat because we had a friend out at Colorado State that 3D printed the whole skull for us at 50% size. And so it was neat to hold the whole skull and to use that and mark it up and plan for what would be our surgical correction was a very good tool. And let's see. Yeah, we came back after an October CT. We brought her back a couple weeks later into early November. And this surgery isn't possible without some really great people. Jim Schumacher, who was faculty at the University of Tennessee for a long time, has worked with Jack Easley on these. And Dr. Bob Hunt at Haggard's, they're just very, very creative and driven people, always looking for a solution. And they're really the driving force behind this. And so what had been come up with and what had been done a few times is they had, what you have to do for the surgery, in addition to really help them out, is we've got this septum in the middle that's deviated badly, this nasal septum. And what Dr. Schumacher had sort of pioneered was a way to use giggly wire to, in one move with three different veterinarians, you resect the nasal septum, which is important because you can't really leave it in there to fix the nasal bones and fix the maxilla. It needs to come out. And the problem is when they used to sort of cut from the nasal side, they would cut the nasal septum out, you know, and they'd cut it back maybe 2 or 3 inches to the beyond the deviation. The problem was is that most rostral edge of the septum typically proliferates with granulation tissue. And so horses being obligate nasal breathers, there's not enough real estate for that granulation tissue and to still have a breathing horse. So that would be problematic. Dr. Schumacher figured out a way where we could get a really good angle, we'd have to do a laryngotomy and pass these wires to the laryngotomy. We'd do a trephine right on the bridge of the nose. And then we'd also use it to thread some wires out the nose. And so you can make three different cuts and pull out this giant triangular chunk of nasal septum. And so when you do that part of the surgery, if anybody's had a bloody nose, you know how bad that bleeds. And sometimes the surgery can be broken up and done into two pieces. Thankfully, the anesthesia team at Haggard's is really spot on. And we've got enough people there that will immediately pack it. So we'll have these things intubated through a tracheotomy. We'll make our cuts through the laryngotomy. We'll cut the septum right out and pack it immediately. And then we turn to working on the nasal bones, because that's sort of the next point. You've got these two tiny, thin nasal bones running down these things. Even when you're dealing with yearlings and bigger horses, those nasal bones aren't real thick, and we've got about a 3.5 millimeter screw that we can fit along some plates. So we've got to make some incisions down the bridge of the nose. We've got to do a wedge resection, and we'll cut a wedge out at the area of maximal curvature, and we'll try to pull that wedge out and flip it around so it begins to straighten out our nose, and then we plate that together. And as long as, God willing, the surgery is going well, which it did in this case, we're able to continue on to the next part of surgery. Because now we've got the nasal septum out of the way. We've got our nasal bones corrected fairly straight. We still have a maxilla, however, that is bent in the hard palate. So it sounds pretty brutal, but what we've got to do is essentially take an oscillating saw across through our point of curvature and try to create a wedge through there, or just cut right through there. And so essentially what we've done lately is we'll try to cut right through and then straighten it out. So on one side of this horse's head, it's going to have where the maxilla still makes that contact. But if you've straightened it out on the inside of that curve, now there might be a large gap. It might be a 2 or 3 centimeter gap. What Dr. Hunt and Dr. Schumacher figured out is, well, why don't we use a section of rib? So while we're doing the other procedures, another surgeon will be harvesting a section of rib that we can then use to serve as a block in the mouth, essentially between that where we've made that fracture line on the inside of the curve. So that's an important way that we can help straighten it out, provide some structure. There's going to be periosteum attached to it, and that's going to help, or a little, we try to leave some periosteum attached to it for it to grow across. And so that's going to help us out with these things. So when we're all said and done, it ends up being sort of a 4-hour surgery. We've poked a lot of holes in this little horse's head and been very invasive. But we do all of our blocks, and we're very careful to manage pain control on these things, because it doesn't do us any good if they wake up and they're just absolutely miserable. So we try to be really on top of our pain control with local blocks and be very aggressive with that in the postoperative period, because we want these horses to eat. And I can tell the veterinarians out there that they do eat. They will come out, and even though it looks pretty rough, they will absolutely eat. So that's a very important part of us, because obviously we've done all this work for them. We want them to pull through with this surgery. And it's not a cheap surgery. It requires a lot of surgeons in the room. It requires a lot of technical expertise, because in order to fix the rostral aspect, the pre-maxilla, back to the rest of the maxilla where you fractured it through, we've got to place a bunch of Steinman pins through there to try to hold things steady. We're looking at maybe even using essentially like some splints like we do with jaw fractures, since we've created our own iatrogenic jaw fracture. That's one of my interests. And we'll put some K wires and things, so that anything to provide some stability. Obviously, you don't want this horse going and running and playing too aggressively for the next 6 weeks while things go and hold, but they do pretty darn well. We almost always get some degree of infection with these, and it just has to be managed. For example, the nasal bones, those screws, because there's such a thin margin of error, those screws almost always pop into the nasal cavity. So not all of those will end up holding. We'll typically get the skin incision over the nose to heal, but oftentimes those nasal bones, we don't have every single screw holding perfectly. But generally, I can say that we've had enough time that they will hold, and in 4 to 6 weeks, we'll remove those plates anyways. And then we'll come back. Sometimes the fixation that we put for the maxilla needs to stay in there a little bit longer. We'll end up having to leave those in for maybe 8 or 9 weeks. It just sort of depends. We always get some type of infection in there, and it just ends up being a management issue. So we'll be working with these horses a lot, rinsing out where we find it and letting the mouth granulate really well. Thankfully, one thing the mouth does really well is granulate. And so we can generally work with our wound management without putting a speculum on them where we're going to damage their maxilla and displace something that we've just worked so hard to fix. So it's not a surgery for the faint of heart, for sure. But it is something, you know, we've had horses go on and race with this surgery. So if it comes down to when people are saying, well, I want this horse to be a performance animal, I can say, yes, it can be a performance animal. We do need to watch the side that maybe we have the alar fold falls down. We pulled the septum out. We need to just manage and make sure that any granulation tissue that's at the back of that, where that nasal septum would have been, make sure that that is not becoming overly aggressive and impacting the airway. But we can absolutely, these horses can be athletes that can be shown. It is not going to be a perfect cosmetic outcome. If people see the after pictures of VEDA, they're, or any of other surgeries, they're not absolutely perfect, but unless they're being judged on their smile, it's going to be okay. So I understand this might not be desirable for halter breeders or something like that, where they're very concerned about the absolute cosmesis, but these can be a very functional horse because the back of their mouth is typically very fine. We don't have a problem with that. And so they just need more regular dental care at the front of their mouth to manage how those incisors are going to meet and where. And that's important. And that's something that can be done every, you know, maybe 4 to 6 months for the rest of their lives. But I think that's a smaller price to pay. And this surgery, you know, it's not cheap. It might be $25,000 to $30,000 by the time we get through the surgeries and the wound care and then removing the appliances and the hardware after later. It gets to be an investment, but a lot of times the horses that we're doing this for, they might be worth that much. They have the potential to be worth that much. And we've also just had owners that have done this because it was for the good of the horse. And that's greatly appreciated.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, it's such a complex and intensive procedures. I think it's fascinating. Personally, I'm curious what the timeline is on these sort of cases for, you know, full healing, full recovery, back to normal diet.
So I guess essentially, you know, we want to see these horses. We want to give them as long as possible to mature before they start having airway problems. Because ideally we get to them maybe just while the airway problems are minimal, because we're really trying to get as much growth into that head as possible. Because even though we fix the one side, we've now cut both sides of the maxilla and they won't grow as normal. So you almost always end up with some degree of a monkey mouth where the mandible is longer than the maxilla. So depending on how far we can get these things out, typically it's somewhere between 6 months to a year. And once we start on them, if we've got to do a surgery, and typically we've got them moved back, they'll be eating pelleted feeds within the day of, you know, they'll recover from surgery and being pelleted feeds. We'll try to get them to eat hay pellets beforehand. We've talked to owners about that. Before we do surgery, let's get them eating a pelleted feed and pelleted hays. That way it's just the least amount of chewing possible for them. So we'll get them used to that. And then they'll typically move right on to transition post-operatively back to their normal feed right off the bat. And these horses, as far as the aftercare, we do keep, a lot of times we'll send them straight home a few days later, just once we've kind of got them awake, made sure that all their blood work looks good, that they're not having any fevers. And once they kind of get through that initial 48-hour period post-operatively and they're appearing to be quite healthy, they'll go home. And then we'll typically try to see them in about 14 days or less. And that way we'll see what has dehisced, if anything. And there almost always is some degree of wound dehiscence in the mouth. And at that point, we can do cultures, look and see what needs to be flushed, if something needs to be debrided or whatever. And then sometimes those horses end up staying with us just depending on what the complication is. And they might stay with us for a week or two. We've had some people leave them here for a month. And some horses have, you know, we've been able to say, here's what it is. We need you to flush this in the mouth. It's not going to require sedation or anything like that. And they'll take them home with them and they'll manage them from there with their regular veterinarian. Because some of these horses are coming from quite far. It just depends what is the most convenient, essentially, for the client and for us to be able to get an eye on these horses. But yeah, they'll go home eating pretty much regular feed. And once everything heals up enough and we start pulling out the hardware, then they can go back to full grain, full hay, the works. And they go on to develop relatively normally after that.
Is there any other advice that you would give veterinarians faced with similar cases or such severe malocclusions?
Well, I think when we think about these, you know, it's everybody's sort of knee-jerk reaction of, you know, they see a rhinos, or maybe they don't appreciate it that much, but there's something just a little bit off. I think it's good to start that conversation with owners at that new foal exam. If there is, whether it's being a malocclusion 2, 3, or 4, so a monkey mouth, a parrot mouth, or rhinos, you having that conversation early and understanding what the consequences are. And you know, a monkey mouth and a parrot mouth aren't fatal or anything like that. We can do things early in the horse's life to help it be more manageable later on in life. And I think those are very helpful by putting braces or an appliance on that stops overbite so that we don't get teeth locked in behind each other and we have free movement of teeth is really important. And the same thing with a rhinos is understanding, having that conversation with owners that, you know, it doesn't look that bad right now. It is unfortunately likely to get worse, and that this is understanding the progression of how this goes so that owners have an idea of what may go on. Because I think a lot of people don't understand that they can be fixed. It does take time, patience, and money. They certainly can be fixed or can be managed, but it's definitely not an automatic death sentence in my book. If you're looking at the horse as a whole and it's a reasonably healthy foal and it's what the person was wanting for, with the exception of a rhinos, they don't need to lose hope. It's just buckle up for a long ride.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rainbow, for taking the time to come on Daily Vet Life and share this filly story with us. It was really fascinating to hear.
Well, thank you very much for having me. We've got a lot of interesting dentistry cases, so we will always be a source of interesting dentistry cases. I try to keep them posted on our Facebook when we get some interesting ones. So happy to share and expose more veterinarians to some of the different dental surgeries and maxillofacial surgeries that we can do.
Great. And if you're tuning into this episode through wherever you get your podcasts, head over to equimanagement.com. We're going to share some CT scan images from this filly's case, and they're pretty fascinating to see. That's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks to our sponsor, Dechra.